Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 27, The Shadow and the Flame. I am one of your co-hosts, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my continually diseased colleague, Christopher Slate.
Hello.
And, you're sick. I've got some sort of weird disco party going on in the apartment next to mine. I don't know what's going on this week. But it is a cool and fun and exciting week in the world of Nintendo. There's a lot of interesting things going on. Our big topic this week is going to be, what Nintendo can do to become the number one video game brand once again. But before we get to that, we're going to kick it off with some news. So like I said, there's a lot of cool stuff happening this week. By the time this podcast comes out, there's going to be a new downloadable update for The Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes.
Yeah, this is that one Nintendo announced a little while back that's going to add the Den of Trials, which is that new 30-stage dungeon.
30-plus stage, if I recall correctly, is what they said at the Nintendo Direct when they unveiled it.
And it's also going to have two new outfits for you to unlock. And
Fierce Deity and Linebeck's costume.
And one of my favorite additions is you'll be able to actually buy friendly tokens from the street vendor once you've completed the main game by, lifting Princess Styla's curse. So that means that friendless folks like myself or just people that have trouble getting together with other people to play will be able to get those costumes that are hidden behind those friendly tokens.
Yep, indeed. That should improve things a bit if you don't have any nearby friends to do co-op with.
Or if you've only got, like you and I played with a guy at work, but you only get one friendly token per 3DS that you play with. So, getting those tokens can be tough. There's also going to be some new Miiverse stamps added. They've improved online matchmaking by asking you kind of some personality questions before you play, which sounds a little weird, but maybe that'll work. And various performance adjustments, and one more small little thing, you'll be able to add people to your blacklist if they exit the game through the pause menu during play.
Yep, should be pretty cool. Then, on December the 3rd, Pokemon Picross is going to be hitting the Nintendo 3DS eShop. And that's one that I'm really excited about. I really enjoy Picross stuff. And, this one is free to play. There's going to be tons of puzzles you can pay for. And, I'm probably going to go nuts with this thing. I'm looking forward to it quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, too. And I think, thinking back on when we talked about this previously on the show, I was a little ho-hum, I think, for some reason. But actually, I'm a little bit stoked this is coming out. I do like Picross games, so I'm looking forward to it.
And then on top of that, there's going to be some more Super Mario Maker content coming out the same day, I understand.
Yeah, that was a really nice surprise. And we don't often get a heads up about this stuff. Usually it just kind of appears in the events section. But there's going to be a new level made by the Mario and Luigi Paper Jam team that's going to be put up. And also by beating it, you will unlock a Mario and Luigi Paper Jam costume, which, similar to the Triforce Heroes costume, which had three links stacked on top of each other, this one seems to incorporate the three different characters, Mario and Luigi and Paper Mario, kind of all together into one sprite. So,
pretty neat.
Yeah, it should be kind of cool.
We interrupt this podcast with an important bulletin. The disco party seems to be over. I repeat, the disco party seems to be over.
Your noisy neighbors have finally calmed down a little bit, huh?
So it seems. Did you get the Frog Mario costume that came out a few days ago?
I did. As soon as I saw that was a thing, I jumped on and grabbed it. My only slight twinge of regret there is that I guess this means that we won't actually be getting it as a real power-up in a future DLC.
That does kind of seem likely.
Yeah, but if that's the case and we weren't going to get that, I'm happy to at least have it as a costume.
Yeah, it's cool to get, in some way, shape, or form. And then after that, this Friday, it's the big one, the ginormous, super huge RPG, Xenoblade Chronicles X, releasing on Wii U.
Yeah, and I've been really excited to see that it's been getting some really, really strong reviews. And initially, when this game came out in Japan, because it's been out there for forever now, it seemed like the import impressions were a little bit, you know, ho-hum on it.
It's true. I was a little wary after that. I mean, it wasn't going to dissuade me from getting the game, but it was a little disappointing to see that it didn't get as high marks as I was hoping. But since I love the first game so much, I figure I'm totally going to love this game.
Yeah, and you know, I don't even remember if I ever knew what the actual Japanese reviewers were giving it. It just seemed that the English speaking folks here in the West that were importing the game didn't have rave things to say about it. I think Kotaku famously had a quote something along the lines of, "If they had to describe the 50 or whatever hours they'd put into the game, if they had to pick one word, it would be boredom."
Oh, yeah, I think I remember hearing that before.
So that was a real bummer, and I was still going to get the game because I liked the last Xenoblade Chronicles enough, but it seems like now that people have gotten their hands on the actual English version, most outlets overwhelmingly seem to really support it. I think the average Metacritic score for it right now is an 84, which is really strong. So I'm stoked. I got the after a lot of hemming and hawing, I finally did pre-order the special collector's edition.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, with the art book and I think there's like an extra little piece of art in there and the USB key with the soundtrack sample.
Yeah, I bought the entire soundtrack a couple months back, and it's a very eclectic mix, but it's a pretty darn neat soundtrack. It's too bad the collector's edition only comes with a sample of that instead of the whole thing. But hey, better than nothing, that's for sure.
Yeah, the game's intimidating because from what everyone says, you don't even get into a mech until 80 hours in or something like that. So
yeah, this is going to be another big one. When I said this was the big one, I really meant it. It's supposed to be 100 plus hours.
Yeah.
So yeesh.
I think it's supposed to have the biggest open world ever.
So, yeah, that's what they're claiming.
Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be crazy. I'm super looking forward to it, and I've been trying to clean off some of the other games I've been working my way through to make room for it. Hopefully, I'll get Yoshi's Woolly World and some other things done in time.
Yeah, can't wait to start playing it. Hopefully be able to give some early impressions in our next episode.
Yep.
But aside from these things that are immediately happening, there's some other cool news that we heard. There's going to be an announcement about the anticipated Pokken tournament game coming in about a week from now on December 10th. Going to find out some new characters.
Yeah, I believe if I read right, one was supposed to be a new playable character and one was kind of an assist character of some sort. But that'll be exciting to see.
Mm-hmm.
This game's a bit more on my radar now that it's locked in for the Wii U.
Plus, you're probably pretty excited about the Amiibo card.
I'll tell you, all they got to do is dangle that Amiibo carrot in front of me and I'll buy anything. And, not that a Pokken tournament looks bad or anything. It's just not normally my kind of thing. But I've definitely had to give it a second look now that you put, the word Amiibo in front of it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and there's some other cool stuff. Just last night, suddenly, out of nowhere, the Nintendo account went live. At least it did for Japanese users.
Yeah, I was not expecting that. And now it makes you wonder, when is it going to go live here in the U.S. and in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, it could happen anytime. We could find out, tomorrow that it's going up, or we might not be for a few more weeks. Maybe they want to, work some kinks out or things like that. But yeah, it could happen anytime.
Yeah, but right now, if you're a Japanese Nintendo fan, you can set up your own a Nintendo account, which you can do by using Facebook or your Facebook, Twitter, or Google Plus account. But I read the fine print. I was actually looking at the...
Or your Nintendo ID.
Yeah, or your Nintendo ID. But I'm sorry, the point I was about to make is I read the fine print on the Japanese page using Google Translate. And it seems like, if I'm reading it right, the only way to actually have it... if you wanted to buy things, through the eShop over the web and then have it automatically download to your 3DS or your Wii U, then you have to set up your Nintendo account using your Nintendo ID. Apparently, something set up quickly through Facebook or Twitter or Google Plus will not give you that functionality.
I see. Still, though, from what I've heard from people who've done it, they say, signing up for it is super, super easy, and that it seems like the partnership with DNA has already paid dividends in that respect.
Yeah, and straight away, there's a deal going on that if you sign up, I believe, now through, when is it?
February 1st, I believe.
February 1st. Then you'll get Yeah, I think 100 yen for every 1,000 yen, sorry, that you spend. It's basically the equivalent of a dollar back for every 10 you spend.
Well, you get 10% back, basically, which is what they were doing with the Nintendo Digital Deluxe program. If you remember that, you know, it
right.
was running for like a year after the Wii U came out. You buy something digitally, you basically get 10% back. But this means you get money back a lot faster. I think then it was like you have to spend $50 to get $5. Now, if they're doing it with, you know, every 1,000 yen, that's basically, like you said, spend $10, and then you're getting some cash back right there, and you can use it to buy other stuff. So that seems pretty promising.
Yeah, and it seems like this will stick around this time, because this is something that Iwata was saying, it seems like 2 years ago, even at investor briefings, was that they needed to kind of take another look at how they do the financial kind of business model of gaming, and
mm-hmm.
and how they wanted to reward people who spend a lot of money on games and help them buy more games. And you can finally see those kind of plans solidifying here.
Yeah, when they said they were going to switch over to a new sort of rewards program, this is kind of what I was expecting. I kind of thought, oh, they're just going to you know, sort of do the digital deluxe thing, and it'll, you know, just be, you know, cash back on your rewards, or sorry, cash back rewards on your purchases. And that's, you know, certainly what they're doing out of the gate. But of course, they have promised that with My Nintendo, there will be, you know, other types of rewards as well, which is cool. And, you know, I'm looking forward to whenever that falls into place.
Yeah, definitely.
On top of that, there has been some news, or maybe rumors, to be more accurate, about the Nintendo NX system.
That's right. There's been some talk from Digitimes, which is quoting a unnamed source, an unnamed Taiwanese source who claims to have knowledge of kind of the production details. And it's if this stuff turns out to be true, it's pretty interesting. Apparently, Nintendo was hoping to be able to ship 20 million units of the NX in 2016 worldwide, which would be a huge number. You know, to put that into perspective, they've only shipped just under 11 million Wii U's worldwide since that system launched.
Mm-hmm.
But supposedly, due to some supply constraints and not having, you know, being able to get all of the components as quickly as possible, now it's said that it's more likely they'll be shipping 10 to 12 million units of the NX in 2016, which, again,
that's still a pretty crazy number.
Yeah, that's still, you know, about how many Wii U's they've shipped life to date. So if that happens, it'll be kind of surprising. But it's exciting, because if Nintendo is going to be that gung-ho behind the NX, then you think, well, you know, what do they know that I don't know? You know, they must have a lot of confidence in whatever this is. But also, it makes a little bit more sense if you think of it in terms of, if the NX really is a crossover device that somehow incorporates both a handheld and a console, then they're essentially launching two platforms at once. So, you know, if you look at the installed base of the 3DS to date, that's, you know, they've shipped over 54 million. So it starts, those numbers maybe start to make a little bit more sense,
I suppose. But the thing that makes me kind of question whether this is all just a bunch of made up garbage or not is that, according to this report, they're going to, you know, go into full production during the first quarter of 2016. So like around, you know, March, they're going to start entering mass production and making all these things before they've apparently, you know, ever shown it to the public, or, you know, to most developers, it seems. And that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I guess the only thing I'm not sure about is, and I wish I knew this for previous generations, how early, you know, those systems went into production. Because obviously,
that's a good question.
Obviously, they're going to be stockpiling them for a while. They're not just going to be making them and shipping them right out. They're going to be filling up warehouses so they're ready to have a significant number for launch. But it does seem pretty early if they would be targeting, you know, a fall or holiday launch.
Maybe they're going to pull a Sega Saturn at E3. They'll be like, and it's available right now.
Maybe.
Because that worked really well for the Saturn.
Yeah, well, Sega had all sorts of problems with that launch, especially since
for
they only
our younger
a couple
listeners,
of chains to sell
I'm being
to,
sarcastic.
Saturn was, what was it, $400, $500?
Yeah, I think it was $400.
But I don't know. I mean, if Nintendo is able to go, well, let me ask you this. If Nintendo could do it, if they were ready to launch, let's say around E3 time, do you think there's any reason they shouldn't?
Well, I don't know. I mean, any time that you launch something that early, I mean, I'm comparing this to the life cycle of the Wii U. you're only 3.5 years into that life cycle. And when you kill something off that early, I think it kind of leaves a stink. It kind of, damages the brand with your existing customers. Like, oh, well, I can't really put a lot of faith in these guys because, they're putting an end to my current system right now. But that seems to be the only problem that it might really have. I mean, the Wii U is not doing great for them. So, they do need to get out another one, but it doesn't seem likely to me.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll see. I can't remember a console they were launching, around summertime. Handhelds, maybe.
Again, Saturn.
Yeah.
Certainly the Game Boy Advance did. It seems like a great time to launch a handheld is just before summer.
But I'd be all for it. And then, as someone who bought Wii U day one and who has really, really enjoyed the Wii U and continues to enjoy the Wii U, I just see Nintendo struggling, and I feel like, the Wii U is what it is. It's pretty much gone as far as it can go. And I think whether the NX comes out in the summertime or a few months after that for the holiday season, I don't think it's going to make a big difference in terms of how much more software, especially quality software, we get for the Wii U. So,
oh, but that is a good point, is would they have quality software lined up for the system if it came out that early? And I would suggest no, they wouldn't be able to do that.
Well, I think it goes without saying, if you look at some of the biggest problems Wii U faced, was its slow drip of quality software, especially for the first year or so. They absolutely shouldn't launch the NX until they're ready to not just launch with at least a handful of big titles, but then to be able to provide continued support month after month of quality stuff. And if they're not ready to do that, then they should delay it, or not delay it maybe, but hold back releasing it. For as long as they need to, for sure.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah, I am going to say that this rumor seems pretty questionable to me. But what is not questionable is that there are some new photos with Mario cards that came out recently. And I don't know if you've used that too much, Mr. Slate, but that's the little AR game where you use these cards that are basically free when you purchase $10 eShop credit, and you use them just to have the Mario characters do things and interact using the cards in augmented reality form.
Yeah, essentially, and you can superimpose Mario or whichever character is associated with the card over a real photo, so you could stand next to Mario, put your arm around him, pose, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and the characters interact with each other as well. Like, if you put Mario with a Goomba, then Mario could, jump on the Goomba or, otherwise humiliate him. But, the funny thing is that when I looked around on Nintendo's website for this stuff, they weren't saying where you could get these cards because they all appear to be retailer exclusives. Bowser, they had announced, is GameStop exclusive, and I picked that up not too long ago. But it looks like the Luigi card is exclusive to Target, and the Koopa Troopa is exclusive to Best Buy, as far as I can tell.
Mm. Yeah, I picked up Bowser and Luigi, and basically I knew I'd end up spending the $10 eShop credit on, if nothing else, DLC for games like Smash Brothers at some point anyway.
Yeah, I figure I'll be spending all this on Pokemon Picross, if nothing else.
Yeah. And I mainly just wanted the cards to just kind of collect them. But I probably won't use photos with Mario too much. I think it's
neat. Yeah, I mean, I'll probably put it in once. I'll try them out, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
But I just I want to have them anyway, just in case.
Yeah. I just wish the camera on the 3DS was better. It's, especially if you've got a smartphone, it really is slumming it to take a picture on the 3DS.
Seemed, not so bad when the 3DS first came out. But that was quite a few years ago. And if you look at it these days, it's like, no, this is not cutting the mustard. But even so, the cards are, basically free. So, yeah. Why not? Cool to have. I'll, take another picture of a Koopa swimming in my toilet or something. It'll be great.
As a quick side note, this kind of functionality would be kind of a no-brainer, easy mobile app for Nintendo to put out, in a world that Nintendo now makes apps. Why not you know, take high quality shots on your iPhone or whatever with Mario and friends.
Mm-hmm. But speaking of apps, there was a little bit of news that came out about Miitomo recently. I don't know. Did you happen to catch that?
I don't think I did, actually.
Well, it was basically just an update about the paid content, the add-on purchases. And it seems to be that that is going to be almost totally aesthetic. It's just going to be for buying you know, costumes for your Mii character that you know, they can wear when they interact with the other folks.
Oh, now that you mention it, I do think I saw that. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, so that's not very egregious. I don't know how Nintendo plans to make, you know, a ton of money off of that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it doesn't seem horrible. It seems like an okay way to do it. Not really shoving it down anybody's throat or anything like that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that wraps up our news segment of the show. But before we move on to the big topic, I did want to give some impressions of a new release that I've been playing. And that is Pokemon Super Mystery Dungeon.
Man, it's been a long time since I played a Mystery Dungeon game.
Yeah, me too, actually. I don't remember what the last one was that I played. I can't remember if I played the previous Pokemon Mystery Dungeon games or not. I know I certainly have played, you know, some titles in the series, but it has been a while. But let me tell you, this is definitely a Mystery Dungeon game. You know, you start playing again, you're like, oh yeah, this is certainly familiar. I remember doing this before. You know, it's got those, you know, randomly generated dungeons that are not super exciting. It's got those enemies who, you know, take a step along with you and, you know, will chase after you every step of the way if they can. You know, lots of items to collect. You know, that limited inventory space. You know, if you like that stuff, you'll probably like this one. If you don't like those older ones, you know, you'll probably want to take a pass on this one as well. I will say I did the personality quiz at the beginning. They have, you know, a whole bunch of questions to ask that determine which Pokemon you get transformed into. And I ended up being, how do you pronounce his name? Riolu, I think. The one that evolves into Lucario. So I was pretty happy with getting that choice.
Yeah, this is the game where you are transformed into a Pokemon and you actually hang out with the Pokemon and you all talk to each other, right?
Yes, although your main character is you know, fairly mute. He's not terribly talkative. But yeah, at the very beginning of the game, it actually uses the camera to you know, like superimpose that, you know, your whatever's going on in the game is like sort of happening in your room, and you get, you know, sucked into the Pokemon world by touching the screen on your 3DS.
That sounds
and then you're there. You're transformed into a Pokemon, and you're chased by these mysterious villain Pokemon. You meet up with this, I forget what kind of Pokemon he is, but this guy who helps you out, you know, accompanies you through the first couple of dungeons. He has a peculiar sort of, you know, down-home, old-fashioned southern way of talking. But darn it, I cannot remember what Pokemon character it is right now. Oh, well. So it's got, you know, all these Pokemon trappings, but there's no escaping the fact that it, you know, is certainly a tried and true Mystery Dungeon game. And I don't know. I'm not super feeling it so far.
Yeah, I'm really not this game's audience, so I guess I can't weigh in. Like I said, I played, I think it was actually the first one in the series, and I remember it came out, or I feel like it came out not too far away from the first Pokemon Ranger game as well, or at least maybe they were the same year or something.
Yeah, I believe that's true.
And I remember thinking they were both, you know, kind of, you know, easy to get into, kind of, you know, light fare. But I enjoyed Ranger more for some reason. I think I've just always had a personal thing against randomly generated dungeon type RPGs. Like,
well, they do tend to be a little bit boring in that regard. And so far, this hasn't changed my opinion of that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically the, you know, for people that do dig that kind of thing, like with, I think Etrian Odyssey is another popular series like that.
Well, it's not randomly generated, but, you know, there are a few similarities.
What am I thinking of then? Sheenan the Wanderer or something?
Yep, that is definitely a Mystery Dungeon game.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So it's that thing where, you know, it's a fresh experience every time, I guess you could say, but I'd rather have something that's just very carefully crafted, you know, for the optimum kind of play experience.
So, yeah, I tend to feel the same way.
I need design in my level design.
Mm-hmm. But hey, if you are a fan of the Mystery Dungeon games, this one will not disappoint. All right, we're going to take a little intermission, and when we come back, we will talk about what Nintendo needs to do to reclaim its position as the number one video game brand. All right, we are back, and we are going to discuss our big topic for the week, which is what can Nintendo do to win back the top spot in the video game universe? What can it do to be number one again, or at least, you know, be, you know, very, very competitive with PlayStation, Xbox? And Mr. Slate, you were the one who proposed this topic. You're the one who thought that this is a discussion we could really get into. So what do you think? What can Nintendo do to reclaim their title?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say, for anybody that thinks that would scoff at the notion that Nintendo could ever retake the crown, you know, just look back at console gaming history. I mean, only twice has the kind of the top winner in the previous generation carried that over and still been leader in the next generation. And I think that happened from PS1 to PS2, and it happened from the NES to the Super NES. Although during the Super NES era, they had some really stiff competition from the Sega Genesis, and they were kind of neck and neck for most of that period. So all it comes down to is, you look at last generation. Microsoft was the clear winner with the Xbox. Clear winner with core gamers, I guess you could say. If you consider,
I mean, that's the thing, is that no one really expected that the Wii would come out of nowhere and be as popular as it was.
Yeah, that was a really unique situation because on the one hand, that kind of proves the point that Nintendo kind of had been counted out and they came back with the Wii. But I think even when it was happening, and especially in the last couple of years of the Wii, it started to fade a bit. Xbox kind of caught up. I'm not sure where the numbers were in the end.
But yeah, I'm not sure either.
I think everybody looked at the Xbox as being kind of the winner among traditional gamers, and the Wii had this special kind of fad designation, not to take away from, the fact that it had some great games.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know which one actually, achieved the higher sales, but in a lot of ways, Xbox was the clear winner. And even all these years later, people are still playing the Xbox 360, where most of the Wiis have been, delegated to people's closets where they're collecting dust.
Yeah, and more specifically to the point, I think everybody just saw going into this generation, the current generation, saw Xbox as being in the prime spot. And
Absolutely.
Then all it took was for them to get, crazy with all of the digital rights managements they wanted to do, preventing people from loaning games and all of this crazy stuff. And everybody, before the system even came out, before they even had a chance to sell one system, everybody had dumped it for PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in that situation, you had two very similar consoles. So, they just went with the one. And also the PlayStation 4 had a slight power increase over the Xbox One. So all it takes is for somebody to say, hey, we're going to do cartridges when the industry is, moving towards CDs. Or, hey,
no,
we're gonna
I see
try
what
to,
you're saying there.
We're going to try to control, how you loan games to your friends. All it has to do is somebody has to shoot themselves in the foot, and then the next guy up gets a shot at taking the crown again.
Yeah, he just has to not shoot himself in the foot and make the smart decisions. But this is kind of a different situation because it's not really at the start of a new console cycle. I get the feeling that Xbox One and PlayStation 4 are still going to be going on for quite a while from here on out, whereas the Wii U is going to get pushed aside, and Nintendo's coming in with a new console midstream.
Yeah, and that's where it's going to be very interesting because, it was a little bit similar with the Wii U in that it arrived a year before the PS4 and the Xbox One started to come out. But a year, it didn't end up being very much. I think people knew that the new systems were right around the corner. Here, they really are entering kind of right in the middle. So they have an opportunity here. They could, for the next few years, if they come out with a more powerful console, be that system where, it mattered a lot that you could – get a slightly higher resolution and a slightly better frame rate in a lot of games if you picked PS4 over the Xbox One. Mm-hmm. They could be in a similar situation here where maybe it's not a night and day difference between the graphics on the NX and the other guys, but if you can clearly say that most multi-format games have the slightly superior version on the newer hardware, that could be a big advantage for Nintendo for the next few years. But a lot of people have already just put money down, to your point, on a PS4 or an Xbox One now. So it is going to be challenging for Nintendo to convince those folks to go out and buy another console. So hopefully people that haven't come on board yet with PS4 or Xbox One will have, the NX to consider. And if the NX can compare very favorably or have some advantages, like we said, maybe they'll choose that. And maybe it'll have enough of a kind of a fresh, gimmick, for lack of a nicer word, that could make it a secondary console for people that already have purchased a PS4 or an Xbox One. So in the end, I'm not sure if this coming out midstream will really be a strong advantage or disadvantage. What do you think?
It's a tough question. I think in this case, coming out midstream, being able to do something that could potentially be more powerful than the opposition, could be very beneficial to them, because that's where they've lagged behind in all the last several generations. And like you said, having a more powerful console can really make a whole lot of difference.
Yeah, that is if they decide to go that way. I mean, we heard those rumors not too long ago, or rather, it came from that report, and I believe the Wall Street Journal, where they said that the technology was going to be, I forget the exact phrasing, but the insinuation was that it would have cutting edge graphics, industry leading chips, I think was the quote.
Yeah, yeah.
So, hopefully that's the case, but the question there is, and it really seems solid that this will be some kind of handheld console crossover.
Seems pretty likely, yes.
Whether it's literally a one device that you can carry a lot with you or plug into the TV, or it's two devices, or two devices in the same box, or an optional kind of portable thing you can buy after you've bought the main console. I still wonder, how do you get, cutting-edge graphics, cutting-edge console graphics on a handheld? Because even just getting Wii U
graphics, to do it at a reasonable price.
Well, that's the key. I mean, even just getting a Wii U kind of graphical power on a handheld right now would be really hard to do without, making it so expensive that nobody would buy it. I mean, the Vita, it was the most cutting-edge handheld graphically there's ever been. And
yeah, it still looks great.
Yeah, but it's still not as powerful as, consoles today. So,
and I had a hard time catching on.
Yeah, yeah, because people ultimately, didn't want just a console graphics on a handheld. That wasn't the most important thing in the end. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot they can do, obviously with what they can offer. But I'd like to back up for just a second and talk about, if you're talking about bringing people to Nintendo, either people that maybe once grew up on Nintendo but kind of felt they needed to graduate to these other consoles, or, people that just have never given a second glance at Nintendo, how do you bring those folks in? And you do need them to some degree. I mean, obviously, Nintendo can always count on the hardcore Nintendo fans, and they'll always be great for kids. But how do you, grow your audience beyond that? I mean, I think Wii U proved they can't go back to the well that they went to with the Wii and bring in a huge kind of casual gaming crowd, because all those folks play mobile now.
Well, maybe they could if they found the right gimmick, but I can't begin to imagine what that gimmick would be. So let's assume that that gimmick is unattainable at present.
Right, right. Then I think one of the things they need to address is their brand. I think, the Nintendo brand right now is so associated with the Wii. It's so kind of defined by their, commercials of families on couches kind of playing Mario Party together. And, for decades now, or it feels like, I'm not sure exactly how long it's been, there hasn't been any viable sports, titles on the Wii. There hasn't been, it's not known for having the more mature games that kind of dominate the PS4 and the Xbox One.
I don't know what you're talking about. Devil's Third's about to come out, man.
Quality mature games, I should have said.
Ah, right.
Itagaki-san, but it is not being reviewed nicely. So, yeah, I think it helps that Nintendo's keeping their characters in front of people in various ways, that they're starting to really focus on, you know, maintaining and building the value of their IP through these partnerships with Universal, you know, theme parks and, you know, movies that supposedly are in the works and things like that. Even Amiibo themselves, you know, is a great way to keep the characters in front of people when we haven't seen games from most of those, you know, the characters featured as Amiibos in quite a while. And I think Nintendo needs to do a much better job hyping and even overhyping, kind of in a positive way, their big releases. We've talked about this before, but a new Zelda game should feel just as big as a new Assassin's Creed or an Elder Scroll game.
And, or Call of Duty.
Yeah, or Call of Duty, exactly.
Yeah, those get hyped for, you know, like, you know, seems like a year or more in advance. Like, as soon as the other one comes out, it's like, okay, let's start hyping the next one. And, yeah, especially with Zelda, it seems like they fail to do that. And I guess they were kind of on the right track last year by, you know, showing off Zelda at the Game Awards. But, of course, then they failed to actually bring the game out. So it kind of didn't go in the right direction. But despite that, I know what you're saying, and I completely agree.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's not just getting the word out, but it's kind of what you're saying, too. And Nintendo's always been very hesitant. I think they've kind of had an internal philosophy of, you know, try to under-promise and over-deliver wherever they can. But I feel like you need to shout it from the rooftops. You need to be, you know, say, look, if you've got a great new Zelda game coming out that you believe in, you need to stand up and say this is going to be the game of the year.
Yeah, you know, this is an event.
It's an event. And and I also think as much as they do need to adjust their brand a bit and, you know, again, don't the image people have of you shouldn't be, you know, a smiley white family on a couch playing games. They also kind of need to own who they are as well. And, you know, when it benefits them, you know, when it's great to be the maker of Mario and Zelda and things like that, don't run away from it, you know, celebrate it. And they've done a pretty good job of that. But mainly I just keep coming back to this. They just need to recognize who their audience is and do a better job of targeting them. And the reason I keep making fun of the family on the couch is I just feel like that is such a small portion of anybody they could actually get today. And it's not that you can't get older gamers and you can't get younger gamers, but that's the family playing games together on the couch is definitely a holdover from kind of the Wii. And it's a fantasy to think that we're going to get back there. Unless they've just got the most crazy new kind of Wii topping unexpected product in mind, I just don't see how they recapture that zeitgeist ever again. And I think it's smarter if they just focus on the people like they have been with the Wii, you know, with the little that they've had to work with, the few games they've had coming out. They've done a great job serving people, you know, great DLC and kind of an ongoing, you know, commitment to these more core titles. Mm-hmm. But they really need to take that to the next level.
Yeah, so obviously they really need to, you know, improve on the way they champion some of their brands. I mean, they got really good at it with, I think they were good at with Splatoon, actually. And obviously they were really good at, you know, doling out the content over a long period of time with Smash Brothers. So they just need to learn to do that with some of their other games, some of their other properties, and that could help them in big ways. But, you know, some of the other things you brought up, I don't think they can really do on their own. You know, you mentioned mature titles and sports titles, and that, I think, is where they have to make things really appealing to third parties to help them out.
Well, and the bottom line is we've seen this kind of catch-22 for years and years now. You know, third parties think that they can't, you know, make games that will perform well unless it's a very specific type of kid-focused game or on the Wii, kind of a multi, you know, player kind of a, you know, a party experience. But they feel like they can't come in and make gamer games on a Nintendo platform because the audience just isn't there for it. And that it's too hard to compete against Nintendo's own, you know, high quality first party titles on Nintendo platforms.
Right.
So, and that's going to be true. I mean, that's the reality that's kind of shaped itself. And as much as I hate to hear publishers and developers say that stuff, it is true to a large extent. So I think,
well, I think you've even argued it on this podcast that you know, Nintendo doesn't really necessarily need third parties to be a success, but I think they do need it to be, you know, number one, to take back that number one spot.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think that's a big distinction. I think you can run a tight ship and have a successful business serving you know, an audience of a certain size, but if you want to, you know, be number one in the industry, that we're talking much bigger numbers of people at that point. So
right.
So the biggest thing they can do is just make the NX, really build it with one of the primary focuses being that this is going to be a very, you know, ridiculously easy platform to bring multi-format titles to. That you'd be just stupid to not do it. Even if you're going to sell in low numbers, the development costs, the extra cost associated with making, you know, an NX version has to be so ridiculously small that no one's not going to do it. And then gradually over time, especially if there is an advantage, like if you're getting a slightly better performing or better looking version of Assassin's Creed or Call of Duty on Nintendo's mm-hmm. platform, you know, the hardest of the hardcore are going to go and invest in the NX for that version.
Or if you could, you know, take it on the road, take it to school, and don't have to worry about, you know, transferring saves and stuff like that. You know, that could be an advantage as well.
Yeah, that would be huge as well. Like, you know, essentially if you're getting, you know, one of the biggest games, like if you were getting Destiny, but you're also getting portable Destiny, basically in the same box, then that's a really big advantage and it's very attractive for the NX. So yeah, they just have to, you know, they just have to make it easy. They just have to not give people reasons not to come over, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you mentioned Splatoon before. I think they need a lot more of that. They need a lot more of, you know, as much as Nintendo likes to surprise people with hardware, they really have stopped surprising people with software. And that's not to say that
it's kind of true, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and that's not to say that each iteration of even long-running franchises like Mario and Zelda, they still find little ways to be innovative and keep things fresh or fresh enough or interesting. But Splatoon really kind of made it clear just how rare it is that Nintendo says, here's a massive new IP mm-hmm. that's just kind of come out of nowhere. And now
it was a new property for like a new generation, and you know everyone was coming in at the same level. And, you know, Mario and Zelda and Metroid are all great, but it's like, okay, yeah, we know what these are. They've been around for a while, and they might not appeal to, you know, a certain type of gamer. But when you bring in something that is really, you know, like you said, and like the characters say, fresh, you know, that's a really, really good way to get some attention.
Yeah, and it also added a type of gameplay to the kind of the Nintendo, you know, pantheon that was underserved, you know, kind
that's
of
true.
A shooter. And it's very much a Nintendo take on a shooter, and you're not necessarily going to have, you know, a lot of Call of Duty fans, you know, loving the Switch in aesthetic or whatever. But they need more of that. They need more of, you know, in addition to, you know, serving the people who demand more Marios and Zeldas and Metroids, hopefully we get more Metroids, it's also saying we also need to surprise people. You know, this needs to be a platform where you feel like great new experiences can happen and not just, you know, tweaked and slightly improved versions of the experiences you already are familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe next they can you know, tackle survival horror or something like that and bring that back
yeah.
to some prominence.
I guess, although I guess the Splatoon, you know, or Splatoon is to shooters as maybe Luigi's Mansion is to survival horror.
I'm not sure about that, but I think there's room in Nintendo's catalog for more than one spooky game. Definitely. I mean, yeah, we did just get Fatal Frame, but I think, you know, they could do something on their own that's not a Luigi title.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And, you know, maybe it's even just on the survival side. You know, they could do, I could see kind of a Zelda exploration game, but it's just kind of climbing, you know, a Nintendo-y type Everest.
Disaster Day of Crisis 2.
Yeah.
Did the first one ever come out?
Not in America. It did in Japan. And I think it did in the UK as well.
Okay, so it was just us that got shortchanged again.
It's a monolith game. Come on, Nintendo. You know, another thing is another game-changing thing they could do is if they really upend just the business structure, the kind of the financial side of selling games. And this is, again, goes back to comments Iwata made at past investors' briefings where he really felt like that was a fundamental part of the gaming industry that needed to change and shift. So, you know, the simplest example is what we're seeing with My Nintendo and rewarding people who buy games and giving them incentives to buy more games. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know. What if they do something crazy? I mean, I don't even know what it could be. But, you know, what if they come in and they just challenge the notion of, you know, every, you know, game here is one of two set prices. Or, you know, we've seen them experimenting with free-to-start stuff like that. I just don't know what else they could do, but it seemed to be something they were really focused on.
I feel like, you know, what they're doing by offering these immediate rewards for you know, digital downloads is a good way to go. I mean, they've also said that they don't want to, you know, devalue, you know, what a game should be. That, you know, developers make great games, especially Nintendo developers, and they should be, you know, paid well for that work. We don't want to see them, you know, sliding down to, you know, the lowest of the low, like, you know, with mobile games where it's like, okay, here's our game. We can make a dollar. We can make nothing. What are we going to do? We certainly don't want to see anything, you know, like that. So, you know, I feel like what they're doing with the money back is certainly a right step.
No, yeah, clearly that's a good idea. I do think there might be something to, you know, if you can look at two different games on the same platform, you can look at two different 3DS games, for example, that maybe, you know, both cost $40, but one is a Legend of Zelda game and one is, you know, like a simple puzzle game. And you can say, well, obviously the budgets there were different. It wouldn't necessarily be degrading the value to recognize that the investment for one was much greater than the other, so the end price to the consumer could be different. And obviously we've seen some of that with, you know, Mario Tennis. They knocked $10 off. It should have been quite a bit more for that game.
Yeah.
And they've done that with some other titles where they, you know, they kind of value price it. Captain Toad was a great example.
Yeah, Captain Toad should not be less than Mario Tennis, but I'm not going to complain that we got that game for $40. But you make an important point about, you know, value and prices and stuff, and they do have to make sure that the NX is priced competitively. You know, even if it is, you know, more powerful than the other systems, you know, can they afford to sell it for more than the other systems? That's going to be a tricky situation.
Well, I guess you figure if they came in with if you're thinking of it as more of a traditional console, like let's imagine it doesn't have a gamepad with it or something like that, that's going to eat up a lot of the, you know, the cost there, then, you know, you could certainly today deliver a PS4 equivalent system, an Xbox One equivalent system. Since those systems launched, the component prices have come down.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the prices for PS4 and Xbox One have come down over time too, but you could probably come in with something that was maybe a little bit more powerful at roughly the same price as where the other guys are at now. Just because, you know, that's where, you know, technology has evolved and gotten cheaper. But if they really want to provide something significantly better, and then if they wanted to, you know, if you wanted to pack in like a handheld thing too, then that starts to really make that impossible. That's why I feel like if it is a crossover device, the handheld will still be sold separately, but will definitely work in conjunction with the console. Although I'm not sure about that either, because because that would be a great add-on if you already bought the console. But if you only wanted a handheld, and let's face it, the handheld market has been, you know, the much stronger market for the past several years. If so,
yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like that's what they're doing is, you know, for Japan, you guys, it's going to be a handheld because, you know, consoles don't sell over here. You know, whereas for the U.S., you know, console tends to rule. And yeah. I feel like, especially in Japan, it has to work as like a standalone handheld thing.
And if a kid wants to buy the next Nintendo system to play the new Pokemon or Yo-Kai Watch or whatever, you don't want to tell him, okay, that it's $200, but first you have to buy a $300 console.
Right.
So it's just going to be so interesting to see how they work that out.
Yeah, every time we talk about it, it's like, okay, this is how it should be done. But then we're like, wait, how is it possible? When you do the math, this doesn't add up. It won't work. But so it's a bit, it's a tricky thing. But if anyone can pull it off, you know,
yeah,
it's them.
And if you look at the lesson, we've talked about lessons Nintendo has learned from, you know, their more recent failures. You know, one of those lessons was they launched the 3DS at a price that ended up being way too high. And they had to cut it by, what was it, like 70-something bucks?
Yeah, I don't remember at this point exactly, but yeah, something like that.
So, you know, that's still got to be pretty fresh on their minds too. You know they can't go in and overcharge. They know they can't, hopefully by now, they know they can't come in with something that's too underpowered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they got to have the power. They got to have the price. They got to have the third-party support. But, you know, they are learning in other, you know, ways. You know, we have a Nintendo account now. As of yesterday,
yeah,
there is finally like this unified Nintendo account over in Japan. So we'll finally, you know, be able to do something with that and, you know, have your purchases linked to this account instead of just to your hardware. And, you know, that's a big step forward right there.
And that could be another kind of killer function as well, if you could finally have Virtual Console work as it should, which is across different platforms. You buy Super Mario Brothers, you know, once at the eShop, and you've got it, you know, for the at least for the foreseeable future on all your Nintendo devices. Then it becomes kind of, I'm building a game library, like one big universal game library that I'm carrying potentially from platform to platform. That would be pretty attractive to me. That might be something that brings in people from other systems. This idea that, you know, ultimate backwards compatibility, you're never really leaving anything behind. Your library just continues to grow and you kind of take it with you. You know, maybe they could fool around with some other things too, like a virtual console kind of, you know, arcade where you could maybe do kind of pay per play in addition to buying the games, you know, for very small amounts. Maybe you can just kind of duck in, or maybe through a subscription, you can just kind of play whatever you want in the whole history of Nintendo.
Well, I don't really like that as an alternative to being able to buy the game, but as a secondary option, if it's like, yeah, that's just how I want to do it, then sure, that seems like an interesting thing they could try.
Yeah, definitely as a secondary thing. I mean, it's like now on iTunes, you know, you can pretty much subscribe to iTunes and listen to any song in the iTunes music store, just stream it whenever you want, or you can actually buy that and own it, you know, forever. So,
Or like PlayStation Now, where you just, you know, sort of rent a game for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, but definitely having, you know, presuming that whether they have to build the virtual console library back up again on an NX or whatever, at some point they will have, again, this huge collection of some of the best titles in gaming history, and it feels like they can make good use of that in one way or another, and that could be another kind of feather in their cap, you know, another something that differentiates them from the other guys.
Heck, maybe could even bring back some of those casual gamers who all want to see Nintendo's software library be on mobile, even though it would be a crappy way to play them.
Yeah.
Maybe this could be the device for them.
Two other things that come to mind is, one, hopefully Nintendo still keeps online gaming free, because that's a pretty good advantage. I mean,
yeah, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, in the position they're in now, I think it kind of has to be. They're not really in a place where they have a service they can charge for.
Yeah, but they still do kind of have to match up. You know, if you think about somebody, if they're like, okay, the new Call of Duty is coming out, which platform do I want to play it on? And if NX starts to look attractive and they think, oh, well, the graphics may be a little bit better on NX, and you know what, they don't charge you to play online, that's looking pretty good.
Right.
But then if the online features are just kind of bare minimum and the overall experience is so much better than the other platforms, then maybe they don't follow through on that.
You know, yeah, NX, well, they got to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. But the other thing is, you know, I would say Nintendo has always had a really good advantage with female gamers. I think, you know, historically on consoles, you know, it's the young male demographic that's always been overwhelmingly targeted. But Nintendo's been better than most in providing not just games that have maybe a more broad appeal, but also games that just feel a little bit more inclusive. You know, from games like Animal Crossing to even a lot of characters in Smash, the ability to choose your gender, you know, it's a lot... You just don't. There are just not many titles on other platforms that seem to really be, you know, equally for everyone. So
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of stuff on Sony systems, but certainly it's a huge advantage they have over Xbox, which, you know, really seems like the dude bro system. Not to generalize too much.
Well, my personal impression of it is that definitely Xbox has always been kind of the dude bro system. Sony somewhere in the middle, and that Nintendo is still tops in that area. But they really need to push, or they could push on it even more. I mean, again, you know, let's have the option to play as female Link. Why not? You know,
yep, like we were saying before. Sure thing.
It's those things. It's not putting out more style-savvy games. It's,
I don't know. People like those too. But
there's nothing wrong
with
that.
Yeah, I mean, they do have, I think, a bit of an advantage there. So they ought to, you know, keep on with that.
Yeah. And, you know, the games that are, you know, they're best games. Not just like, you know, not games that are just about pandering. Again, nothing wrong with style-savvy. But the way people used to try to court female gamers was, well, we'll put out more My Little Pony or Barbie games. Which is ridiculous. Just, you know, put the option to play as a girl in Zelda. You know,
and for the most part, the you know, appeal of Nintendo to female gamers is just Nintendo being Nintendo, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that could be another area where they could maybe build on something. So, yeah, I mean, sorry, that's just kind of a bunch of, you know, rambling of thoughts and semi-related ideas here. But I do think that, you know, nothing's a given in the console industry. And I think, you know, Nintendo has just as much shot at being, you know, number one 4 or 5 years down the line as anybody else. They just really have to have learned from kind of all the mistakes and all the unfortunate situations they've found themselves in. And the good encouraging news, I think, is that for the last several years, we've seen a lot of signs that they have been learning, and they are mm-hmm. doing a lot of things now that are really smart. And, you know, when, you know, Wii U didn't launch and take off like they'd wanted it to, they eventually did seem to circle the wagons and really come back to the core consumer and acknowledge them in a way that they didn't feel like they really did back on the Wii. So I think their head's on a little bit straighter, and I like what they've been saying. So I'm optimistic.
Yeah, I don't really think I have anything else to add beyond that. I think you make several good points. And, you know, if Nintendo takes this sort of thing into account, they really could, you know, come in and, you know, surprise the industry and take it by storm once again.
It'd be great to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that pretty much does it for this episode. But before we go, it is time for another dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the Capcom NES game Mickey Mousecapade. It's a long one. I'm going to take a deep breath. Help! Help! Echoes a mysterious voice. Mickey Mouse, the famous world explorer, has heard the cries of one of his friends and he's off on a rescue mission. This adventure starts in a zany funhouse. Join Mickey and Minnie as they turn it inside out, looking for their missing friend. A mischievous creature may fly off with Minnie, and you'll have to get her back. Now that Minnie is safe, you must help our heroes make it across a vast ocean, on foot! Even the feisty flying fish can't stop Mickey from his search, but what about the cantankerous crocodile waiting at the shore? Next, the deep dark woods await our heroes. Mickey and Minnie visit all four seasons in this fantastic forest while dealing with poisonous plants and perilous predators. What's this? A pirate ship manned by the dreaded pirate Peg Leg Pete? Help our heroes climb up and down the mast and go deep into the bowels of the ship. Help Mickey defeat Pirate Pete. The last place to look is a mysterious medieval castle. You help Mickey and Minnie wind through the maze of chambers, defeating mad monsters as you go. Enter the world of fantasy, mystery, and excitement with Mickey and Minnie as you solve the mystery of Mickey's missing friend.
That sounds awesome.
That was a really long back of the box. And unfortunately, the game is not awesome. It's kind of terrible.
All right, well, that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow The Hoff on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and I'm at Chris Slate. Hoff also has a really cool blog called Still Playing with Power, which you can find at ChrisTheHoff.tumblr.com. And you can email us at PowerProsPod@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, we always really appreciate it if you can drop by iTunes and leave us a review. Also, we are now also on YouTube, so look for some videos popping up on us from time to time over there.
Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Chris Slate.
See ya.
And our martial arts friend, Guile.
Sonic Boom.
We will see you next time.